I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Contributor Alex Provence, senior contributor Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
And you can tell your friends, no matter where they live, they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world at WNPR.org. You can also go online from anywhere in the world and see all of the recipes that we talk about on the show, with lots and lots of other things too. We're probably going to make you hungry, but we hope to satisfy you too. So our website is foodschmooze.org. This is the part where I turn to Alex Provence and say, and how do you spell schmooze?
Oh, boy.
This is
on the spot.
Everybody.
On the spot. Here we go.
Can you say that in a sentence, please?
The Food Schmooze spelling bee will begin.
You want me to start you off?
S-C-H-M-O-O-Z-E.
Excellent.
Schmooze.
Excellent.
Yay.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay.
Yes,
that's
correct.
Here we go. So we're going to go straight to the hot dog report once again.
Woo. And it is now. And it just opened. An L.A. hotspot for hot dogs has come to Connecticut. It's called Pink's. And anyone that's been on the West Coast or in L.A. knows that is the number one place for hot dogs. From movie stars to tourists to top chefs from around the world go there to have what I think is one of the best hot dogs in the country.
I went online, Chris, and I see that all kinds of food people, lots and lots of food people.
Oh, yeah.
Guy Fieri, Giada De Laurentiis, all these food people that are there. And they also have names, you know, wisely, some of the hot dogs after these people.
Yeah, because I guess these people would come in and say, I want this, this, and this and a hot dog, and that's all they'd have. And then if they did that over and over again, it became their hot dog.
Well, the gorgeous Giada De Laurentiis, you know, I couldn't believe the things that she had on her hot dog. About 40 things on her hot dog.
You can. Okay,
This
is in Bristol, Connecticut at Lake Compounds, and it just opened, so now when you're at the park and having a good time with the family, you can have an L.A. Pink's experience.
So I'm reading The Gothamist online, who's talking about a few things in Newark, and what do I come upon? But this guy is telling people in New York to get in their cars and drive to Pink's in Bristol to try the hot dog. He said, you know, the only other one is in Ohio or something like that.
Yeah,
so
it is probably one of the best hot dogs.
This is a hot dog with a lot of mounds of meat sauce, no beans.
Yeah,
this is pure meat.
And that's the way I have it. I have it pretty straight up. And I've had it like this, and I've been going to LA for years now. And what I have is I take a plain beef hot dog, all beef, and because they have many different kinds, even vegetarian ones now. I take relish and I put it on the hot dog. And a little bit of cheese, and then on top of that, a ladle or two or three or four or five meat sauce.
You can control it?
Yeah, you can. You can have it your way, or you can have one of the many that they have. They even have a Martha Stewart one.
Okay, so you have mustard pickles.
No, pickle relish.
Pickle relish.
Cheese.
Okay. Cheese.
And then the meat sauce on top.
No mustard. No onions.
No, just that. And
Is there a fixins bar or something?
You ask them, you know, they just like, what would you like on your hot dog? And I'm like, ooh.
So it's like a Subway where you're walking down the line and
they're putting it. Oh, my God. It's exactly like that. Oh. How cool.
How many of these hot dogs can you eat?
I can only eat one because it's 3/4 meat sauce, 1/4 hot dog. Okay. And you have to eat it with a knife and fork.
I see the wisdom of that. I really do. What's this one that has onion rings all across the top? I mean, big onion rings.
Yeah, what's
rings.
The name of it? Oh, I just – I was flabbergasted.
I mean, I looked at it and I thought, seriously? So that in other things.
But it had a funky name.
But I thought, how would you eat – you can't even eat this. I mean,
but you know what? It's so much fun to just eat there.
It's perfect that it's at an amusement park. I mean, this is absolutely perfect. All right. So Pink's, welcome to our region. We want to say that. So here is – we're going to be talking about this later in the show when we have Susie Middleton on, no relation, with her cookbook, Fresh from the Farm. This is a year of her recipes and stories on a farm she has on Martha's Vineyard, Lucky Susie. And so we're going to get with her and talk about doing a pizza on the grill. But for right now, we want to talk about these grilled bread toppers, I call them. If you think about this, grilled bread is just like pizza. This is how to do a quick pizza if you don't want to go through all the dough. We're going to tell you how to do that a fast way. But the fastest thing on the planet is to grill some bread with a little olive oil, maybe rub some garlic on there. So olive oil on both sides, some garlic, and then a couple, 2-3 minutes on the grill until it's golden on both sides. And then you put on your toppings, and you have instant pizza. Now, you can use any flavor combination. We're going to run through lots. We have these at our website right now, foodschmooze.org. But Alex is the person who inspired this, because you might, if you listened last time, you heard Alex. What did your mother do when she was in Spain
for breakfast? As a kid, we eat a pan tostado. So it's good bread, but if it's a day old, that's fine, because you're going to toast it. And it's the oblong sort of country bread that you'd get. And you see old timers in Spain do this as well, and they even toast it on a fire. They take a stick and sort of hold the bread up against the fire. Once it's toasted, you rub a garlic clove on, and it sort of grates and disappears into it. And then you take good olive oil, drizzle it on, and you sort of take your thumb and just sort of push it into all the nooks and crannies and spread it out. And then if you want to get crazy, you can take a tomato and you cut it across the equator, so not the ends, but across, and you sort of rub it onto the bread, and one half a tomato will totally disintegrate into one piece of toast. Oh. A little fresh sea salt, and it's now with a beer or a glass of wine.
Is that breakfast?
That's breakfast.
That is so good. Once again, that is so good. And we have this online, of course. So we're going to go round robin here. Right. And I have a few that I found online that are terrific. So Chris Prosperi.
Actually, as we're sitting here, I keep thinking back to Friday lunch in elementary school, which was French bread pizza day.
Right.
So that's a good one too, right? You can just take a piece of bread, toast it, put tomato sauce and mozzarella cheese and have that. And that's a kind of standard. But the one I keep going to is one that I learned, and I was just sitting here thinking, it's 25 years ago, West Street Grill, and it's a peasant Parmesan topping for grilled bread. And it's mayonnaise, Parmesan cheese, fresh garlic, and parsley mixed together, and then you toast your bread like we were saying, right? And then you smear this stuff over the top, and then you can put it back with a little cover on top of the grill to toast it, or put it under the broiler if you're inside or whatever, and you get the cheese and mayonnaise mixture, the aioli, bubbly, and then you cut it into little pieces and just eat it with your fingers.
Oh,
that
sounds good.
It is evil good.
So here's one. You would top the grilled bread with crumbled – this is a bit Mediterranean version. I make this all the time. Crumbled feta, some chopped Kalamata olives, and a squeeze of fresh lemon juice. Couldn't be simpler. Lori Mack.
So I would take a tomato, chop it up, take some nice olive oil, and put that in a pan with the tomato. So you get the tomato a little bit warm.
Soften it a little
bit.
Yeah.
And then take some Italian bread, olive oil, and then top it with that tomato mixture there and the olive oil. Stick it under the broiler or on a grill topped with some Parmesan cheese.
So you would do this before you grill it.
Right. But you don't have to.
You can grill it first and then do it. Okay.
Do you slice any slivers of garlic in the tomato? Or
you could, but I wouldn't.
You don't. Okay.
Okay.
Keep it clean.
This is the one I call the BLT, because you'll see why in a minute. So you have the grilled bread slice, which is done with some extra virgin olive oil, and you rub it with some garlic if you want. And this one, I don't rub it with garlic. But I do put once it's grilled, I put a little mayonnaise on it. It's some diced cherry tomatoes, and then I have pre-cooked a couple slices of crumbled bacon, and I just crumble that up on top of it and then put it out there and serve it. So essentially, it's a BLT without the lettuce. Okay, so that's one. Jonathan McNichol.
If it were me, I'd come to your house and eat the one you just said, the BLT one.
I like his thinking.
There you go.
So wait a minute. We're all working. And Jonathan's like, okay, Tuesday at 5 at Lori's. And then, geez, I could be at Faith's for lunch on Wednesday.
That's the way to do it.
Filling out my schedule in here. What are you guys doing?
I do think there is a place in the world for the professional guest. Yeah. You know, this is someone you hire. Just comes over
and
says,
Jonathan,
that is unbelievable.
Do you give requests to, like, hey, I had that yesterday at your house, but tomorrow, instead of the bacon, can I get chorizo?
Oh, good idea. Okay, so here's one. In a bowl, you mix together chopped cooked shrimp, a little bit, this is all in a bowl, cooked shrimp chopped up, a little mayonnaise, a little yogurt, so you can cut back on the mayonnaise a little bit, and that yogurt gives it a tang, and then some curry powder. You just stir all that together, and you smear that on the grilled bread, and you just serve that right up. You're good to go. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
I got one more that's kind of a breakfasty one from when I was a kid, and my mom used to make this for us all the time, and it's taking softened butter and mixing it with a little bit of cinnamon and sugar and toasting your bread either on the grill or in the oven or whatever, and then again, smear this on it and then just give it another little second on the grill to get that a little warm and then eat that. So it's like a cinnamon butter toast.
And I would add some chocolate chips to that.
See?
And then melt that in there.
So yeah, so you're right. This could be breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack.
All right, since we're suddenly leapt into the dessert department. So I put those, just like you, Lori, I put those semi-sweet chocolate chips on the bread, even with the olive oil on it. No garlic on this. And then I put a sprinkling of unsweetened coconut. And then back to the broiler with the lid closed, it goes for about a minute, and the chocolate melts, and there you go. You have the most wonderful dessert. Again, these are all online right now at foodschmooze.org. So I go cruising online, and I say, where in some sea salt, yeah. I go cruising online, and I say, who's doing the bruschetta, we call this? Who's doing some of these? And I come to one of my favorite food people, Giada De Laurentiis. And she has done this for the Food Network magazine, and she covers grilled bread. This sounds so good to me. With gorgonzola cheese and toasted walnuts, when that has melted, you know, puts it back after it's been grilled, back under the broiler with the lid closed for just a minute, and that cheese gets melty, and then she takes it out and drizzles a little local honey on the top.
Oh,
you have that sweet honey with the salty gorgonzola and the toasted walnuts. Oh,
heaven.
That is so good. That's on our website, I promise you right now.
And it's summer. The grills are out.
And here it is. Ted Allen did one for Food Network. Rub each slice with garlic clove before you grill, and then you put a tablespoon or two of ricotta cheese, and then you top each one with a leaf of arugula, and then you top it again with a very thin slice of prosciutto. Close the lid for a minute just to warm it up, and you have this Italian delicious thing. Do I have room to get in one more before we take our break? Okay. Spread the grilled bread with some garlic chili sauce. You get that in the Asian section of any supermarket, garlic chili sauce. And then add some diced cooked chicken and some chopped scallions.
Spicy.
And you have this sort of Asian thing. It's not too crazy spicy.
Yeah, but it sounds good.
Oh, it's really, really good. Okay, well, how fun is that? These are instant pizzas, our version of bruschetta. These are great for lunch, for appetizer. Even on a hot summer night, I would have this just fine for dinner. You know, two or three of these, and I'm all set. All of these on our website right now at foodschmooze.org. S-C-H-M-O-O-Z-E, foodschmooze.org. Party with us there. Oh, and do I have a line of red wines for you? Honestly, unbelievable. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you'll make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight.
Beans.
Cornbread said, now that's all right.
Beans.
Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9, Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, contributor Alex Province, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. WNPR's content director is Jim Cutie, and we thank thank you first and foremost for listening. The things we talk about on this show delight us, and we want to delight you. And so we've put our recipes and locations of places that we discuss on our website so that you can reach it anytime, including right now. So any of the recipes, those bread toppers, we have one more to go that we just talked about that we think are bruschetta. They're instant pizza on the grill, and you can play and fool around with these and make them any way you want. If you like a bunch of ingredients together, you don't get it often enough, this is the time to do it. So it's all up there at foodschmooze.org. Alex, one more. You talked about your pan tostada?
So to clarify, so last week we did pan tostado. So that was a simple tostado. Bread with just toasted bread. So garlic, olive oil, a little bit of sea salt. Today we did pan con tomate. So that same recipe, except now you smear the half of a tomato on top.
On top of the garlic toast.
Top of the garlic toast. And then the third would be pan catalan. So if you took the version I just gave you and you layered beautiful jamón serrano on top, you would have pan catalán.
So the garlic, the tomato, and now a slice of
jamón serrano. Spanish ham, you could use prosciutto, you use French ham, but just basically
a thin slice of ham.
Thin slice of delicious
so,
ham.
Jamón serrano. is more expensive than some of the others. This is a gorgeous thing. Can you explain?
But you only need a tiny bit. So if you go to a good grocery store, it seems very expensive, like prosciutto. But it's sliced so papery thin that it actually, you put a layer onto a plate and you can turn the plate upside down and it'll stick to the plate. So you only need like a fraction of an ounce. And it's salty but flavorful. It's like bacon. Can it be better than bacon? I mean, it's pretty... It's pretty good.
It's pretty close.
You're in dangerous territory.
I'll say you're close. Okay, I'll give you that. You're close.
I'll give you that too. Here is the big question. Who is going to win? You know I am
talking
about Thursday, June 19th, because you are invited to attend and be the top judge at the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze Martini Competition, where I refer to myself in the third person over and over again. CPTV will be there to film. It's all to benefit WNPR and CPTV, including the Food Schmooze. And you're invited. The tickets are $65 each to taste at all of these cocktail stations. You cannot believe how many, how beautiful they are. These are works of art in themselves. And then you visit all the food stations with all the top chefs, because we know you're hungry while you're sampling, and you vote for your favorite cocktail. There is hot dance music. It is the most amazing scene, the most fun party of the year. It's always a sellout experience. It's at the Riverview in Simsbury, Connecticut. We hear that a lot of hotels and inns all around that region are already sold out. People are renting limos in crowds. Designated drivers get a discount. So if you would like to attend, go online right now to ctmartini.org for tickets and information. Thursday, June 19th, the start of the weekend, the start of the summer. ctmartini.org.
Can I add one more grilled bread topper before we go? Because
fire away.
I was just in LA and I do the cystic fibrosis event at Warner Brothers every year, and this is the dish I serve. But as I was thinking, this would make a great topping for a bread. And what I did was I took roasted chicken. So basically think about having leftover roasted chicken, and I shredded it, right? And then I made a paste or a dip with roasted peppers, and yes, I used canned.
Good.
Walnuts, toasted walnuts, and then lemon juice, a little bit of olive oil, and this thing I get in the Middle Eastern stores called pomegranate molasses. And it's cheap. It's like a dollar something a bottle.
You can also get this in health food stores.
In health food stores too? Sure. Yeah. And it has a unique kind of flavor, right? It's sweet but tart at the same time.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
But it's pomegranate.
But it's pomegranate. Yeah, it's basically pomegranate juice reduced down into a syrup.
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It has a unique flavor. Anyway, you put all these ingredients in a food processor. You spin, spin, spin. And then to tighten it up, it gets a little bit of breadcrumb. And then this is like a dip you can, you know, eat with bread or whatever. But I did it on top of the chicken.
And you don't need the breadcrumbs.
Oh, yeah. You don't need the breadcrumbs because you're on bread. So that's one thing you can do without. And it would make an amazing bread topping.
Excellent idea. Okay. So here, I promised that we would talk about a line of wines. One of the tips that you'll find at our website right now is, and Alex, I know you feel this way, Chris, too, that if you're in a situation where you're a store you don't know, you're traveling, or you just don't know in general, why should you? What wine to bring to somebody's house? A good rule of thumb is to buy the broker's wine. So some people are so good in their taste that they have a line of wines, and you see that person's name on the bottle. So I love, for instance, Michael Rosenthal. I put this online for you so that you can go there and see them. So you're traveling somewhere, and he has these wines at all these price points. And you just pick the price point you want, and that you know you can walk in the door and feel good because he has, I think he has really great taste. Alex, you have somebody you like.
Yeah, my favorite's Michel Chapoutier. He makes awesome southern French wines that are always exquisite. So it's Michel, M-I-C-H-E-L, and the new word, C-H-A-P-O-U-T-I-E-R, Chapoutier.
I like the Wildman selections. And we always feature them, and it's a great way to buy wine when you're in a rush or whatever and you don't want to think. You're like, I know the Wildman wines. I know I like their selections. And you walk in just like you said and you say, I want to spend $20 and I'd like something from the Wildman selection. And if you're at a good shop, they just run in and you say white or red and they give it to you and you walk out. You don't even have to think about it.
Okay, there you go. So here is a name that I would add to the list in a second because – I, among all the wines out there, this is one of my favorite winemakers on the planet. I am in love with Jeff Rundquist. His vineyard is near Lodi, California, and he makes this line of reds that is so exquisite with ripe fruit that they're not sweet, but you can taste the gorgeousness. So you know how you get a perfect Bing cherry, and it's not sweet, it's not too tart, it just makes your mouth explode with juice because it is so incredible. He captures, this man is so meticulous that he doesn't, when he's in the process of making the wine, he doesn't even want to have the seeds get crushed.
Wow.
That's how careful he is. This is a craftsman. You know, he's working so carefully. He doesn't care about awards. He doesn't care about, he wins lots of awards, but he won't even, for instance, send his wines, I'm told, into Wine Spectator, you know, the way all these, he wants to make wines that he is proud of. And in California, you know, people who live around the area of Lodi, they race and, you know, certain ones, parts of his line sell out. Any wine you gave me from this line is fantastic. It goes from about $22 up to $34, I think. And they are in our region. So all Very of this cool. is online. In our region, you want to stay at your wine store. If Rundquist wines are not on the shelf, you want to stay at your wine store. The distributor is 55 degrees. And they'll look it up in the book and they'll have it to you within 24 hours. In Massachusetts, it's Ruby. In New York, they have a distributor coming in the fall, Martin Scott. But for our Connecticut and Rhode Island people, you just say 55 degrees is the distributor for Jeff Rundquist wines.
I'm going to look for them.
The
I've
Barbera,
never heard of them.
The Petit Barbera. Verdot is unbelievable.
And help me with Lodi again. It's
inland a little bit from San Francisco. So okay. And they specialize in Zinfandel. Is their, okay. their
he
great,
makes an incredible
know.
Zinfandel.
Oh, does he?
Oh, my God. I honestly, it's some of the best wine I've ever had. It's really sensational.
And speaking of barbecue wine, Zinfandel is like the perfect summer wine. It goes with barbecue ribs and pork and all that stuff. When I think of a hamburger,
chicken.
Think of American Zinfandel. Yeah. Perfect.
I will have it with lamb, even though people usually have a more, you know, a heavier, more structured wine with lamb. When it's summertime, I want some joy in my red wines, you know, all year round, to tell you the truth. And so
that's pizza wine for me.
Pizza
pasta. Wine. Yeah.
What is
Zinfandel.
Zinfandel.
I love like grilled pizza and Zinfandel heaven combination.
Oh wow, okay.
And now that I know this, I've got to find these wines.
So here's what we do. Alex, tell us about putting a little, we both do this, with a little chill on our red wines in the summer.
Especially in the summertime, wine is served at cellar temperature, which is under 60 degrees. It's like 55, 56 degrees. So when you have a bottle of wine on your counter and it's 75 degrees in your kitchen, that wine's it's too hot. And so I throw it in the refrigerator, take it out, and I actually can keep it in for a half hour, but you can do whatever you want. But it's you chill it just so the condensation sort of forms on the glass and it warms up and much more refreshing.
It's more refreshing for a hot summer day.
And I have to tell you, if you are going to somebody's house and you don't know what to bring, bringing a Rundquist wine of any kind, provided people drink red, people are going to be so thrilled to get this because it's one of these things that seems to just go with everything. I would drink these reds with swordfish, especially swordfish on the grill. Just and even if it doesn't for some wild reason match what you're having or your host has a, you know, a sense of, well, I'll just tuck this away. You know, you could kind of say, oh, I really feel we should open this now. I really do.
That's what I always do. All right, wait, I have a question since we're on wine, and this happened to me recently, and people were like almost like wanting to lynch me. I put an ice cube in wine.
That's fine.
Yeah, and I didn't know what was so appalling. It wasn't a $100 bottle of wine. It was a $9 bottle of wine, and it wasn't cold. It was a white. So I walked over to the freezer. I grabbed an ice cube, and the shock and their faces. And then of course, everybody – I was like, why? Don't you find it was warm? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, well, I can give you an ice cube too. Can you? And it was like this kind of weird kind of like, is it okay to put an ice cube? I'm not saying pour the wine over 50 cubes of ice. I'm just saying one little cube to get the wine temperature down.
With you all the way.
I almost feel like I have to preface in a restaurant, if the bottle's too warm, I'll ask the bartender or the server, can you tuck this on ice for 10 minutes? And I say, trust me, it's better this way. You know, I feel like I owe them an explanation, sort of with the ice cube.
Yeah.
But, you know, it makes it taste better. My friend Bob, who knows a lot about wine, you know, has no problem throwing in ice cubes. And I always think of him.
I mean, what's the big deal? It's a tablespoon. An ice cube is what? A couple tablespoons of water.
Plus, there's water already in the wine.
Hello?
And you're going to drink the wine before the ice cube melts.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
I would say, you know, well, I'm not in that British mode of drinking beer that is room temperature or just mildly cool. I want a beer that is ice cold, and so I am forever putting tons of ice in a beer. And sometimes people raise their eyebrows, but I don't care. I'm having a grand old time while I'm drinking it. So
that's it. Do what you feel you want to do.
That's right. That's right. And if your friends object, well, it's time for the new friends. Okay.
Over beer.
All right. Is it time? Because we are going to come to Susie Middleton, who is not a relative of mine, but used to be at Fine Cooking Magazine, which is a national magazine published here in Connecticut. And she has done this book, Fresh from the Farm. It's about a year of recipes and stories on her farm, which is in Martha's Vineyard. So lucky Susie, she's got all kinds of good farm fresh things to tell us about, to remind us about, including doing a simple, easy pizza on the grill. So we'll get to that and much more. I think until we do, let's get back to our Food Schmooze quiz. But first, if there's anything we've talked about on the Food Schmooze that you want to know about, go to our website. Right now, you can see the recipes, the wines, all kinds of recommendations at foodschmooze.org. S-C-H-M-O-O-Z-E, foodschmooze.org.
That's your job, Alex.
Sometimes we're Sesame Street, and we don't mind. So let's go back to our quiz.
Are these more true-false questions?
Yeah, they are more true-false. Okay.
Wow, look, he's starting to sweat a little.
Yeah. Me too.
And so we're
is it getting hot in here?
Okay.
She's turning up the lights. There's spots on each one of us now.
True or false, cold eggs will ruin baked goods if they're cold as in the refrigerator. Cold eggs will ruin baked goods.
I defer to our baking editor, Lori Mack.
Now, this doesn't seem like a true or false because – what difference would it make if you used cold eggs? But then...
Confidence, Lori, confidence.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of recipes say leave the eggs out and then bring them to room temperature.
That's what I always do.
So that must be for a reason, so I would say true.
False.
Oh,
so with your gut.
That was my first answer. How could it ruin it?
Okay, here's why. It's this is from Cook's Illustrated. About a year ago, they had done this, the myth-busting things. And so they said that, in fact, most, and I would have guessed just as you did, Lori, in most cases, you can use eggs of any temperature. And they did a blind test. And you know how they do, a couple cakes. They probably did 47 cakes. And they said it's fine even to use cold eggs in most basic cake recipes. But if you are making a finicky cake, you know, a delicate cake.
See, that's what you were saying.
Then, so you got it. Then you would, that is the one time. Last time when we were saying, you know, I always thought that adding salt to water on the stove would make it boil faster. And they said, not necessarily. Yeah,
unless you put, what, two cups but or three cups in there.
I spent the past couple of days thinking about it. But it makes sense. So and when you make pasta, you want it to be in the hottest water possible. So you make it really salty so the boiling temperature is up higher. Mm-hmm. And now you have a higher temperature.
Okay. Here's an easy one. Will a slam door ruin a souffle or a cake?
True.
Oh, I'm sorry. I tricked you. No, in fact, it won't.
No,
no, they say that soufflés and cakes rise as mm-hmm. tiny air bubbles in the batter, expand in the heat of the oven. So if you slam it shut, I know, but it's not. Yeah. I know.
And these are the science people.
I don't know. I'm going with Julia.
Wait, I can go with the – listen, I have a theory, and I'm a recipe writer part-time as well. I have this little theory about why things are in recipes. I noticed not that long ago that us recipe writers get paid by the word. And sometimes we throw in lots of words because we make more money. Because why do you start a recipe with take the eggs out when we know it's not 100% necessary?
See, I think that people think – I'm not cynical about this. Yeah. I think food writers – I certainly can say I've walked around for a long time and would have told people a little salt in the water. Yeah. I'm just going to make my pasta water boil faster. Turns out it's not true. So I think people really believe this stuff. You know, it gets spread around and everyone says, oh, what a great tip.
When I started cooking, everyone was putting a tablespoon of oil in the water to pasta.
Yeah.
It was like the thing to do because then the pasta wouldn't stick. And what you found was it floated on top and it never even touched the pasta. And then when you drained it, it was out of the pot first and then the water washed it down the drain. So it really did absolutely nothing.
So what do we have? We have Pizza on the Grill coming up next. It's all part of Fresh from the Farm. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine recipes that we feature at foodschmooze.org. We'll be right back after a quick break. Please stay with us.
You say potato, I say patata. You say tomato, I say Creole tomato. Oh, let's call the whole thing off.
Hang on.
Listen, fellas. I believe my baby is putting something in my food. Lord, yeah. I believe my woman, she's putting something in my food. Uh-huh. It used to be I didn't love her. And I've changed my whole attitude.
You see what food does? I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. And this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. I am with the gang, Alex Province, Jonathan McNichol, Chris Prosperi, and Lori Mack. And we are now going to talk with Susie Middleton. You, her her name is probably familiar to you because she was with Fine Cooking Magazine on a full-time basis, and then it was time to follow the dream, and she is on a farm in Martha's Vineyard, Lucky Devil, and has done this cookbook fresh from the farm. This is a year of her recipes and stories, and so we've got a lot picked out to make you hungry, might give you ideas for things to make in the months ahead. Susie, welcome back to the Food Schmooze.
Thanks, Faith. I'm so glad to be with you all today.
Well, here we go. We're going to start right off with deviled eggs. I love them. I love them all year round. In the summer, people have these little chilled things now and they bring them to parties, and I head straight for that table to get them. But I loved your twist on this. These are deviled eggs with a pesto of spinach, basil, and toasted pine nuts. Tell me about this.
Oh, it's so good, and it has a little lemon in it, too, so it's really bright. It's darling, and it's very flavorful, and I like putting spinach in with my basil when I make pesto because it gives it that great green color and another level of flavor, and I grow them both at the same time here on the farm, so it works well. It's something I have and then people can get, so, you know, people love deviled eggs. You're not the only one, Faith.
So mayonnaise, and you talked about a little bit of spinach and basil, and some grated lemon zest is a little secret thing, and some salt and pepper. Those toasted pine nuts, really, really delicious.
Yeah.
I remember when there was a book of deviled egg recipes that came out, so you know that people are crazy for deviled eggs when the publishers understood that they could sell a million of these things.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It really is.
They're back.
It's a childhood favorite, and we do them in my family, so I knew when I did this book that I would have to do something that, you know, use some farm fresh ingredients. Plus, we have 500 laying hens, so we have a lot of eggs around here.
Wow. That is a lot of eggs.
500? Yeah. How many eggs do you get?
About 350 to 400, you know, when they're really producing.
Wow.
But
a day, right?
A day?
Yes.
That's a lot of eggs.
I can see this now, you know, the headline, Susie Middleton sells to China Company.
Egg farm.
No, we're not even touching the demand out here on Martha's Vineyard. People love local eggs, so we're actually the second biggest hen raiser now on the island, and but we could sell more.
And how do you keep the hens safe?
Well, they're in coops at night, and then they're in very large pens during the day, and we do lose them occasionally to hawks, but they're pretty well protected from other critters because they go in their coops at night.
Hawks? Yeah, I thought we were going to talk about coyotes or something like that. Hawks?
Not on the island. We don't have them on the island. So.
Well, you know how they swim sometimes? Seriously, deer swim to islands. Okay, so this is going to be our main focus, and we have this online because we've been talking about grilled bread earlier on the show, and so we wanted to focus on your grilled salad pizzettes. So these are little, easy pizzas with balsamic drizzle and these flavored oils. Now, if you don't have flavored oils, that's fine, but tell me about this quick dough and how you do this. This is a salad on a pizza.
It's really cool, and you know, Faith, from my days at Al Forno, long, long ago, I've been in love with grilled pizza, so you know, in my last book, I did a whole chapter on grilled pizzas, and for this one, I really wanted to make them very accessible for people, so it's got a simple dough, it proofs in an hour, very easy directions for spreading it out on the grill, and then I make it a real social event. It's a party item. It's kind of an excuse for me for our lovely salad greens that grow this time of year, and other mustard and arugula and all that kind of fun stuff, so you set out a bowl of those, then you set out some drizzling oils, and I make a very simple balsamic reduction. It has a little bit brown sugar in it, and put that out, and some lemons, and a little bit of prosciutto, a little cheese if you like, and let everybody top their own grilled bread. And I mean, what could be better than that for a party breaker?
No, that is great, and we have your recipe online, and in fact, we just had it. We decided to make this in the studio. Chris made it for us, I should say.
Thank you,
and we thank you,
it was
Chris.
Really good.
And it was delicious.
Good. Very flexible, too.
All right, so I made one change to the recipe. And what I did was I went next door to my restaurant where there's a pizza place. And I walked in, and he makes probably what I think of as one of the best pizza doughs out there. And I asked him for one large pizza dough ball.
Oh, that's a cool
right,
idea.
And then I took your recipe up from Heat the Grill.
That's smart idea. You don't have to make your own pizza dough. There's a lot of good pizza dough you can buy out there, and that makes it even better for a party when you're, you know, trying to. This is something you could throw together at the last minute when you're having friends over. So that's a great idea.
Well, we have a lot of crab cake fans in the room. We're on with Susie Middleton, whose new book is called Fresh from the Farm, A Year of Recipes and Stories. And this was your focus on spring when greens are terrific. We all love crab cakes around here. And this is a crab cake with an avocado chive dressing.
Yeah. And, you know, it is all about the crab cake. For me, this was another excuse for delicious salad greens because I'm sort of a freak about salad greens. But I also grew up in the Delaware, Maryland area where crabs are, I mean, we ate blue crabs and made crab cakes very much centered on the crab itself. So we're very opinionated in our family about not messing with the crab cake too much. So this is a really yummy back fin lump crab meat with a little bit of Old Bay seasoning, a little bit of mustard and mayonnaise and some fine breadcrumbs, tiny bit of scallion and celery, but not overwhelming with other stuff. It's a lot about the crab. And then I thought that it would be fun to pull it all together with an avocado, you know, diced avocado dressing.
So the back fin lump crab meat, if you don't have that, can you use canned pasteurized?
Yes. In fact, my grandmother used canned pasteurized. You should look and see because often it is, you can buy lump crab meat canned and pasteurized. It's better. Crab meat deteriorates quickly, so it's hard to get it fresh. So that there's some good canned varieties that you can get. Just don't buy the, you know, the shredded up secondary meat. I don't know, you know, for lump.
The cheapest ones in with the canned tuna fish, some of those taste like the tin inside.
Yeah,
it's pretty awful.
Go to the fish store. The fish store will have really good crab meat canned pasteurized.
Even around here, the supermarkets carry the canned pasteurized right
and
at the fish counter.
Fish.
Yeah, right at the fish counter.
Yes, exactly.
But it is refrigerated,
yes.
Right? It's not
yes,
a shelf.
Yes, it is. It is.
I have trouble convincing friends when we're picking vegetables to go with bok choy. And you can get it now in a full-grown size or the baby version.
I love it.
Although I have to say I don't detect too much difference in taste. So I was intrigued. Nobody ever wants to have this with me. I was intrigued you have a recipe for a stir-fried baby bok choy with a lemony sauce. I thought, oh, maybe I could convince them with your sauce.
Definitely, and the method, too. Faith, I got to tell you, we grow a ton of baby bok choy. It grows really rapidly, and it is absolutely delicious. It's gorgeous, and it's very simple to prepare, and it's gotten popular out here. People buy it, so I'm hoping to kind of spread the word about it because it's very good, you know, raw, but I'm not a big raw bok choy person. What I do with it is stir-fry it or sauté it, which that high heat brings out the caramelized nutty flavor, and it's really delicious. And yes, the simple lemony sauce, I did that on purpose so there'd be a recipe in here for people to encourage them just to give it a try. It is just a little lemon zest, soy sauce, lemon juice, and that's really it, a little garlic.
And some cornstarch to make it a little bit thick.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really good. I'd like to put that sauce on a lot of vegetables.
So you make extra sauce, you eat your bok choy tonight.
Susie sauce. I like to do those kinds of things to show people that you can trick vegetables up really quickly and easily with just, you know, a two or three ingredient sauce.
Yeah, lots of times you get people who aren't interested in certain vegetables. This can happen with kids sometimes. You put a sauce on that they like.
Yeah.
If you've got a child who loves lemon, you know, here's a way. It's got a little bit of sweetness in it from a tiny bit of sugar.
Yeah.
Whatever the lemon sauce that you made was phenomenal today, Chris.
That was a lemon oil. And remember on the pizza? So that was a great, great trick that she showed me even. That, you know, when you said, oh, if you don't have flavored oils, you can make your own flavored oil like I did with the –
it's so good.
Yeah. It's just a good olive oil, and then you use the lemon zest, then you make your own lemon oil. Yeah.
So how long did it have to sit together?
I made it last night. I don't even think it needed that long.
A couple minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, a couple minutes.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, freshly grated lemon zest, that oil is so potent right as it's zested that it gives it off right away into the oil infusion.
Here's what I do. If I'm in a place, a restaurant, where there's, in my view, nothing that appeals to me on the menu, I start searching for a quesadilla because I don't think I love quesadillas.
Hey, wait, look, they have tortillas.
I'm like a little child.
It's like chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
and
I know
can,
exactly what you're talking about. I've been in those kinds of restaurants. I'm like, okay, where's the quesadilla? That'll be safe.
Really? Oh, good. Okay. So this was a wonderful combination of things that I wouldn't have done, but Swiss chard with caramelized onions, and you put some pepper jack cheese in there, and that's how you make your quesadilla.
Yeah. And again, I think there needs to be some bridges with a green like Swiss chard, which has kind of a minerally flavor and isn't everybody's favorite. And I wanted something, you know, quick weeknight supper-y that people could do. Any of the alliums, you know, onions, leeks, garlic are really good with chard because it kind of it helps that mineral thing. So I thought caramelized onions and the sweetness would help too. And then with a little bit of spice and the pepper jack cheese, it makes a really delicious quesadilla. And you get your greens too.
This recipe is online right now at foodschmooze.org. And you can also see all about Susie's book and her other recipe for pizza online, because we love these quick, easy weeknight supper things. So for you and your pals, or this is a great lunch idea, we are going to get to tomato season. We're going to get there. It may be October, but we're going to get there. So you do this quick roasted tomato thing. You could use cherry tomatoes. You could use, I think, a discovery of yours. Was this from the last book of plum tomatoes?
Yes.
So good.
And I love that quick roasting method, which, you know, I love to slow roast tomatoes too, but I do that with big beef steaks. Plum tomatoes are great for high heat. They take only 30 or 40 minutes if you pick the seeds out. But this time around, I also tried them with an early girl, which is a tomato that we grow that comes ripens in July. It was one of the earliest ones. And, you know, basic sandwich slicer tomato. And you can take the seeds out of those, cut them in half, drizzle them with olive oil, a little bit of honey, and roast those for 40 or 50 minutes, and you get this delicious caramelized roasted tomato, which is incredibly versatile.
Well, I love the yin-yang thing of the balsamic vinegar and the honey.
What's the oven temp on that for the roasting?
I think I did 425 here, but it can be 450.
Yeah,
they're pretty hot.
Yeah.
Really hot.
Now,
yeah.
If you did cherry tomatoes, the little tomatoes, would you still take the seeds out?
No, and I do cherry tomatoes on parchment paper because they stick for some reason.
Yeah.
They tend to let their guts out. But you can just cut them in half, toss them in oil, and spread them out on a lined sheet pan.
I do these roasted cherry tomatoes all the time because there is nothing, I know you know this, Susie, there's nothing like a salad instead of regular cherry tomatoes than these roasted ones. I'll do this, throw them in the salad, and people go wild, and I, more to the point, I go wild.
Well, yeah, it's that little umami thing, you know, that depth of flavor. Rather than everything being bright and fresh, there's another layer of flavor going on there, that deep caramelized thing. That's so cool, Faith.
Here we're coming to the season of potato salads. I don't know why we don't make potato salad in the wintertime, but we don't. And,
right.
And so I know, Lori, we've talked about this in the past. We love potato salad. So good. So I think this is such a smart idea from you, Susie. This is a grill-roasted fingerling potatoes. So in a way, this is like a potato salad because it has rosemary, lemon, sea salt, and a fresh corn vinaigrette. Now, I thought, wow, I have never even thought of something like that, a fresh corn vinaigrette. How do you do that?
Well, this is one of my very favorite recipes in the whole book, I have to tell you. Mm-hmm. And the fresh corn is really just an addition to my favorite vinaigrette, which, again, had this time around I did a little lime and maple, but often I do lemon. But I just sort of mash the corn kernels into the vinaigrette.
Roasted corn or fresh corn?
No, just fresh. So some of them are kind of crushed and some of them are still whole. I love using corn off the cob. And so I'm basically sort of macerating the corn a little bit in the vinaigrette. And then it goes on to the salad as kind of a little bit of a almost its own little corn salad.
Wow, that sounds really good.
Yeah, and corn's coming too soon.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Had it this weekend.
Did you?
This year especially.
It's coming.
So you're pressing those corn kernels in the bowl with a fork.
Yes.
To extract that milk.
Yes, exactly, that lovely corn milk. And I don't mash them all up, but I mash them, you know, enough so that you've got, yes, that corn milk sweetness is mingling with the rest of the vinaigrette and then going over the grill-roasted potatoes, and there's some shallots, and it's the whole thing
so
is just like, again,
corn.
The fresh and the caramelized thing.
Yummy.
Susie, oh boy. Also in here, in case you want to know, there's a recipe for making your own herb and lemon marinated feta. Feta, I love that. And I've always wanted to make this myself. I try and think, well, what goes in there besides the olive oil? So thank you for that recipe, and thanks for being on the show.
I'm so glad you brought it up today, too, because I was looking at it again. I was like, I'm going to make that today. I love it because I've got the time and the regular in the garden, and we have great local feta cheese. So I was like, that would be perfect. So.
Well, Alex Province has a boat, so we're going to sail over.
We'll be over by dinner.
Be there by tomorrow.
I'll wait for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Faith, and bye to everybody.
Fresh from the farm, Susie Middleton. No relation, but a great, great at food. Thank you, Alex Province, Chris Prosperi, Jonathan McNichol, Lori Mapp. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime, but right now. Find the recipes, food products, restaurants, value wines that we feature at foodschmooze.org right now. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.